evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, August 13, 2014. South Sudanese displaced persons are having sleepless nights as heavy rains flood their camps in Bentiu.
Imagine how people are living, how they are sleeping. Many of them, apparently, they don't sleep because there is nowhere to sleep, and women standing at night to at least have their children sleeping in their hands.
And UN diplomats visiting South Sudan say the hope for peace in the country is very thin.
We've had engagements with President Kiir and with Riek Machar, but we did not hear much from them that gave us hope that there would be rapid agreement in the talks in Addis Ababa.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Recent heavy rains have compounded the misery of many South Sudanese seeking temporary shelter in IDP camps. Violence over the past 8 months have displaced more than 1.5 million people, forcing many to seek shelter at the camps. Yesterday, the United States pledged to provide $180 million in additional aid to help avert famine in the country. Larissa Hook reports from Washington.
Heavy rainfall in South Sudan has turned a UN refugee camp in Bentiu into a swamp. Some 40,000 people sheltered here live in sewage-contaminated flood water. The humanitarian group Doctors Without Borders calls the situation an affront to human dignity.
The settlement has been flooded, water everywhere, so you could imagine how people are living, how they are sleeping. Many of them, apparently, they don't sleep because there is nowhere to sleep, and women standing at night to at least have their children sleeping in their hands.
For many refugees, it's either flood or violence.
We are living inside the water. And outside there, we have been destroyed by war. And come here, we have been destroyed by water, and we don't know what to do.
Aid workers say it is too dangerous for women to leave the camp to get fuel and food that needs to be cooked to prevent contamination.
Many women, they claim to be at risk of being raped when they go out of a POC. And this poses a serious issue, because how do they manage? How should they eat this food without fuel for cooking? That is the issue which protections should be provided to people to go out and make sure they get what they need from outside and come back to serve their families.
South Sudan is only 3 years old. Soon after gaining independence from the Republic of Sudan, a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar plunged the country into renewed warfare that has killed thousands and displaced entire towns. Laritza Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
The United Nations Security Council took part in a video conference meeting with rebel leader Riek Machar yesterday during a brief visit to this week to South Sudan. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power says the UN Security Council warned Machar that the political and ethnically motivated violence, combined with the large number of people displaced from their land, puts South Sudan at a grave risk of famine. She said in a statement that council members told Machar they are concerned that he failed to implement previous commitments to end hostilities and to engage seriously in peace talks. The UN Security Council also expressed fear that the two warring parties will not reach a deal soon to restore peace. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu has more from Juba.
Mark Lial Grand, president of the UN Security Council, told the reporters at a news conference in Juba before leaving the capital today that his team has no hope the government and the rebels will end the conflict quickly.
In some ways, it's been rather disappointing. We've had engagements with President Kiir and with Riek Machar, but we did not hear much from them that gave us hope that there would be rapid agreement in the talks in Addis Ababa. I mean, both said they recognized that there was no military solution to the crisis, but the two positions remain far apart. And so the Security Council gave them both a very strong message and said that we were extremely disappointed by what had happened in this country over the last 7 months.
Yesterday, the UN Security Council team met face to face with President Salva Kiir and his cabinet. The team also visited the Upper Nile state capital, Malakal, one of the towns hardest hit by violence. Grant says following what his team observed and heard on the ground, the two sides are nowhere close to putting their differences aside in order to end the suffering of the people of South Sudan. He says forces on both sides of the conflict continue to violate agreements signed months ago by President Kiir and Machar, and women and children continue to bear the brunt of the fighting. Grant says the UN Security Council is willing and able to impose sanctions on both sides for their actions.
Frankly, the United Nations Security Council is annoyed and angry at what has happened, and we underlined a very strong message that there would be consequences of those who try to undermine the peace process, that were not willing to put aside their personal agendas in the interests of their people.
Grant says many countries have poured millions of dollars into South Sudan to help it succeed. He says his team is extremely disappointed that the country's leaders have not lived up to the expectations the South Sudanese people had 3 years ago when the country declared its independence.
The whole international community, who has been friends and partners of South Sudan in the whole independence process, in making sure that there was the opportunity for South Sudan to become independent, helping to put the independence road back on track, the referendum when it was going off track. And we had expected to be in a position now, 3 years after independence, to be able to help to build a new country, to build on peace and stability of the world's newest country. And instead, what we see is a failure of leadership in the country, the leaders at war with each other, mass killings, a humanitarian crisis, and some appalling conditions for the ordinary Sudanese people.
The U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Samantha Power, reiterated that the U.N. stands ready to impose sanctions on any South Sudanese leader impending the peace talks in Ethiopia.
We, the international community, are prepared to put much more pressure and to impose consequences for anybody in this country who does not pursue the path of peace, given the horrific human toll that this conflict is taking every day.
The UN Security Council delegation today left Juba for Nairobi, where it is meeting with the IGAD ministers to get an update on the status of the talks. Grant says his team will have a frank discussion with the IGAD leaders on what steps to take next following the failure of both sides to adhere to a ceasefire. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Aid workers and activists have welcomed yesterday's UN Security Council visit to South Sudan, and they hope it will encourage the warring parties to stop wasting time and finally reach a peace agreement. Mungume Debs Rakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
Tariq Riebo, head of the UK charity Oxfam, calls for the UNSCC visit timely.
We are hoping that the Security Council visit will draw attention of the international community to this, and also that the Security Council will increase its engagement on South Sudan and put pressure on both sides to reach an agreement as soon as possible.
The deadline to reach a deal on the formation of a transitional government expired last Sunday. Abia Robin, project coordinator for the local human rights lobbying group Voice for Change, says there is only one message that both President Kiir and Machar can easily understand.
If those people are actually sanctioned, you will realize, because most of them even have their family outside there. And if their bank account is being frozen and kept, even all their assets that their income comes in, believe you me, they will begin to look to this situation that is a serious issue.
Edmond Yakani, coordinator for the local NGO, Community for Empowerment for Progress Organization, agrees.
We feel that let them be timely and let them not compromise and let them make very hard decisions that it's centered to protect the civilians in South Sudan.
Riebo wants the Security Council to compel South Sudan's government to sign and ratify the arms trade treaty, which he says will reduce the suffering of the people.
In any conflict state, the treaty is vital in ensuring that we can try and reduce the atrocities committed, because the flow of arms is the fundamental reason why conflict can happen. So if we can control the inflow of arms into the country, then overall we would be able to hopefully reduce some of the impact on the ground.
The UN says nearly 4 million South Sudanese are at risk of famine unless peace is restored quickly. Rebo says because of the ongoing fighting, humanitarian agencies are not able to deliver much-needed aid, especially in remote locations. He says people are suffering.
I think we need to really be aware of the catastrophe this country is facing on a humanitarian scale. This is already one of the worst crises in the world, if not the worst, in terms of humanitarian impact. Beyond the conflict, we are looking at food insecurity increasing systematically across the country, across many of the provinces in the country.
At least 6 aid workers were killed last week, reportedly by a local militia in Upper Nile State, Maban County, prompting many organizations to suspend their operations in the area. Joseph Contreras, acting spokesperson for the UN mission in South Sudan, says more than 200 workers were evacuated from the county after last week's incident. For VOA News, I am Mugumedesu Rakarinj in Juba.
Cattle keepers accused by local farmers of causing insecurity in Mundri West County of Western Equatoria State are being pushed back to Lake State, where they are from. Mundri West County Commissioner Lexton Mabruk says local residents have agreed to drop complaints regarding their farms if the cattle keepers return home. They say their farms have been nearly destroyed by the cattle, and one farmer was even shot dead and killed by a cattle keeper in retaliation for the farmer killing some of his cows. Mabruk tells VOA fellow Nabil Biajo that local residents are overseeing the peaceful return of the cattle keepers to Rumbek and Yirol West.
We resolved that all the cattle owners in Mundu West must go, and it should be a peaceful movement. And the government of South Sudan gave orders to Division 6 to ensure that movement of the cattle herders in Mundu West is done peacefully. Today, we had an arrangement for all the cattle keepers from Rumbek, from Lexi State, to move back to their place peacefully. And now we have deployed soldiers who will be escorting this group of people from Hamadi Payam. So three groups have been divided. One group will take those who are near Hamadi, and then the other group will cross the river and then take them along the riverside and cross near Monvolo. The other group will come near Mundri and get the group from Mundri and move them toward group in Hamadi, join them together, and then they proceed.
And sir, what is the reaction of the local community to all of this?
Local community are very excited. Let me tell you, Nabil, to be frank, despite all what had happened, the host community member killed and the farm destroyed, the local community members compromised with the pastoralists that this issue of killing and cattle killing should be resolved yesterday. They abandoned the cases and they agreed that because of coexistence, because, you know, Lexi State and the Western Equatoria, particularly Mundri, Greater Mundri, had been having a very close relationship with the Lexi State. So what happened is that they dropped all the cases, and those who are suspected, about four people from Lexi State, have been, you know, pardoned, and they have joined their family. And they will be driving, going back to Ural West County peacefully.
You said they have dropped all the cases regarding the incidents and casualties and the clashes between local farmers and those cattle herders. Last time we talked, you said you were in the process of investigating those incidents and that you would come up with findings soon. What did you find out, sir?
We got the culprits and they were brought to the police, and the case had been looked into, and after that everybody was still the complainants and the victim and people accusers were brought to police. But all of them, when they came together yesterday but one, they agreed that, you know, they drop all the cases, both the host community and the pastoralist. As a result, they make up their mind that this case should not continue as long as the pastoralists have accepted to travel back to their place.
Just to get the record straight, one person was shot dead from the local community and there was another one who went missing, correct?
One person was shot dead and allegedly one missing. But all in all, it's not that one missing, but one person was actually shot with an arrow and he's undergoing treatment. So All these charges have been dropped.
That's Lexon Mabruk, County Commissioner of Mundri West, speaking to VOA fellow Nabil Biajo earlier today.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Safe disposal of household garbage is important to protect everyone's health. Flies, rats, and other dangerous scavengers are attracted to trash piles. Rainwater can pool there and breed insects that spread diseases like malaria. Other dangers can develop too. To prevent this, proper disposal of garbage is very important. Do not burn anything plastic, since that can foul the air. Clean, keep, and store plastics, as well as other items that can be reused. For other solid waste, talk with others and pick a site for a communal pit. Make layers of trash and soil until it is filled. Then mark the area so people don't try and use it for another purpose.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Kenya suspends flights to some West African countries. That story is coming up after this break.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can your country depend less on imports and grow exports?
A country can depend less on imports and grow exports by maximizing on its natural resources and adding value to its agricultural processes so that they can be more sustainable to the country's economy.
We need to grow our market home. We need to get more things being produced at home and supported here, rather than constantly thinking that we don't produce stuff that are good quality for us to consume. We must have a production culture that is also a consumption culture of local goods.
Imports are not what we need. It's the export, right? It's our own thing that we grow. So when we grow our own thing, then we will not depend from the outsiders. It's better we have ours rather than getting what we don't know.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, has teamed up with a local telecommunication company on an initiative aimed at empowering South Sudanese youth to use their information communication technology skills to help themselves and their community reduce poverty and unemployment. Waki Simon Wudu has this story for VOA from Juba.
Salah Khalith, UNESCO's country representative for South Sudan, says by enhancing their ICT skills and using smartphone technology, the nation's youth can help reduce poverty, climate change, and unemployment in South Sudan. He says UNESCO will teach them how to do that in the Youth Mobile Initiative.
It provides opportunities for digital literacies in developing applications that can support the various interventions, like in education, health advocacy, agriculture, climate change, radio broadcasting, humanitarian and life-saving activities, peace building, and they will enable the society to engage effectively.
Khalid says by using mobile technologies, young people will improve their lives as well as those of others in their communities.
Innovatively utilizing the potential that is in the mobile phone, those young people can create business and also acquire skills that give them an edge in the IT jobs in the local, national, and international market.
He says his organization is training 40 young men and women who will in turn train others on how to apply mobile technologies. The trainers, most of whom are tapped from Juba University, will undergo 2 weeks of instruction. As a partner in the program, Zain Telecommunication Company will provide digital devices to be used during the training. Ladowani Kenyi, Dean of Computer Science and Technology at Juba University, says the initiative adds to extracurricular programs at the university.
And the students really are going to get a lot out of this, because mobile applications or mobile computing is a field that Africa can be competing, and South Sudan in particular, because we lack the infrastructure for the infrastructure. We don't have it.
Khalid says they hope to empower some 1,200 South Sudanese youth through the initiative, which was announced yesterday in connection with the UN's International Youth Day. The $4.2 million two-year project will benefit youth in 12 countries, according to UNESCO. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on youth programs, South Sudanese officials say the nation's conflict has increased mental health problems among young people. Health officials say youth have witnessed killing and other traumatizing experiences, and they need counseling services in order to learn how to heal. For VOA News, Mungume Debs Rakarinj has the details for VOA from Juba.
The theme of this year's International Youth Day is Mental Health Matters. Josephine Apoen Cosmos, South Sudan's Deputy Minister for Youth, Culture and Sports, could not agree more. Napon says thousands of youth in South Sudan have been displaced from their homes and separated from their families during the fighting. She says unless the conflict ends and people return their homes, many young people will end up with mental health disorders.
The number of street children and those disassociated from the presence from the parents all over the country are the groups which are highly prone to mental disabilities. These are the disadvantaged groups that spread their lives with very little hope of survival in the nearest future. This feeling instills fear and frustration among them, and coupled with the habit of drug abuse, alcoholism, smoking, opium, and stimulants, they develop such mental disorders.
According to the National Bureau of Statistics, more than 70% of South Sudanese population is under the age of 35. A 2014 United Nations report says over 20% of the world's youth experience mental conditions. And the World Health Organization post-conflict report, conducted in the capital Juba, found that 36% of the Sudan population of more than 1,200 people suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. PTSD is a type of anxiety disorder that occurs after a person experiences an extreme emotional trauma involving the threat of serious injury or death. UNICEF Youth Specialist for South Sudan, Jairus Ligo, says his organization is offering free psychological counseling to people affected by the conflict.
There's been a lot of trauma that's been caused to many of these young people, especially those who are now living in camps. Together with some of the agencies, we are implementing activities in a variety of camps to try and address the psychosocial needs of these young people.
23-year-old Ladu Julius is a peer educator working with the NGO Adventist Relief Agency, ADRA. He says most of the youth he has counseled tell him they participate in various crimes because there is nothing else to do. Julius blames the government for not providing more jobs to young people.
As you can spot around Juba, is the issues of unemployment that causes many multi-behaviors like robbery and whatever it. Of course, once you don't have a means of living, you'll be, you know, distracted. And this is even very important to address, you know. This even causes a depression.
Julius also says the country does not have enough vocational schools for youth. 25-year-old Frola Lukudu Justin works for the NGO Greater Upper Nile, Greater Bahal Al-Ghazal and Equatorial Youth Association agrees.
At least we have to have a vocational training whereby everyone is busy. So if they are too busy doing their own business or doing their training and whatever, it will help. And also it will not give them chance of thinking to plan for evil things.
Mario Velvul, the director of training in the Ministry of Youth, says some of the gains that had been achieved by the government to help youth have been destroyed by the ongoing fighting.
Unfortunately, our projects in Jungle and Malakal, due to this conflict, actually explosion. The buildings, the center are destroyed, but since the same program is extended for a year, up to next year, perhaps things may change and we shall go back again and try to do to renovate the same buildings and we start.
United Nations International Youth Day is dedicated to advocating for the implementation of policies and guidelines which improve the lives of the young people around the world. For VOA News, I am Gumedes Ruakarinj in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. France says it is sending weapons to Kurdish forces in Iraq to help them fight militants from the Islamic State group who have taken control of large areas in northern and western Iraq with little resistance from the Iraqi army. French President Francois Hollande's office said today the arms would be delivered in a matter of hours with the coordination of the Iraqi government. Israeli and Palestinian negotiators are in the third day of talks in Cairo in a final bid to reach an enduring truce to end more than a month of fighting in Gaza. A Palestinian official describes the negotiations as being at a very sensitive stage, but there was no public indication that a breakthrough was near. The halt in fighting is due to end as a 72-hour ceasefire expires late today. And finally, Ukraine's interior minister insisted today that the Russian convoy headed to the war-torn eastern region will not be allowed to enter the country. Arsen Avakov called the convoy a provocation by the cynical aggressor. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
The World Health Organization classifies Kenya as a high-risk area for the Ebola deadly virus. No cases have been reported there, but the health body says Kenya's role as a major transportation hub makes the East African country more vulnerable to the disease. For VOA, Muhammad Yusuf has details from Nairobi.
Speaking to reporters Wednesday, the WHO representative in Kenya, Dr. Custodia Mandelat, said her organization has classified Kenya as a level 2 risk infection area.
The Ebola outbreak in West Africa is a serious public health event of international concern. Our quick risk analysis shows that Kenya is high risk of transmission. Therefore, our preparedness to avert the importation of the quickly contained circulation of the virus.
According to the WHO, Ebola has infected more than 1,800 people and taken the lives of more than 1,000 in 4 West African countries since March. Kenyan media report some travellers have raised concerns over poor screening of people at the country's entry points, especially at the airport. The disease entered Nigeria last month when a man who was falling sick with Ebola arrived on a plane in Lagos. Kenya's Health Secretary James Macharia says the government is moving to combat the disease.
The ministry has constituted a multi-agency Ebola task force, which has been meeting for 3 months now to assess the situation at local, country, regional and global levels and advise the ministry on response activities.
Mandelat of WHO has commended the efforts being made by Kenyan health officials and workers. So far, the country remains Ebola-free, although worry that the virus will find its way into the country is running high. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Oh, yeah! That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song We Want Peace by South Sudanese music superstar Emmanuel Jal.
We can send mankind to the moon, and we can reach to the bottom of the sea. That's why it really kind of baffles me that we cannot end wars and bring peace, and we cannot change the way people act, and we cannot change the way people think. So if we sit back, chill out and relax, civilization will soon be extinct. That's why I am. I'm calling on the whole wide world. Come on, people, would you help me? This common evil. I wish the world was a little bit better. Time to start looking at the man in the mirror. Fear is the devil's policeman. Fear make good genocide with Hitler so he can. Feel a war of genocide and love was weakened. Lighting up the land cause nobody was speaking.
We have been listening to Emmanuel Jal with the song We Want Peace. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Let's scream and shout, cause we want peace.
We want peace.
Don't say the least.